So who is starting?
Half an hour, but which includes discussion, right? So we have to have something like say 20 minutes followed by discussion. And of course, if you have any doubt while the speaker is speaking, it is up to the speaker to decide whether the speaker likes to get disturbed during the presentation or all questions have to be asked after it. So it's entirely up to the speaker. So speaker decides whether the questions will come after or before. So you have to tell. Alright, so let's begin. Yeah, you can ask the questions for presentation.
Defining time is not very simple, and even Webster's has not been able to define it properly till now. So it has been a very philosophical question that what is exactly time. But in general, we know what is time, but we are not able to explain what is it. We can just say that it is how long we wait, or it is there is no better definition for what is time. But what we can surely do is to measure the time, because we can attribute something from which we can have an idea that how long time has passed, means what interval of time has passed. So this idea is used to measure time. And the first motivation to measure time was basically for astronomical observations and just also for curiosity and maintaining some records. So initially what they did was, the periodicity is very important in the measurement of time. We know that there is day and night, then again day and night. So this is a kind of a periodic motion. So first time pieces were basically depending on the movement of the earth and the movement of the sun from one point to the other through the sky. So what they invented was sundials. Sundials and gnomon sticks were what they call. They were invented, and those sticks were used to, and using that, those sticks and the shadow, at what angle the shadow is falling.
So what is your policy? What questions before, during, or after?
I would prefer after. So, looking at the angle which the shadow makes with some arbitrary line, they could find out what is the time. But eventually it was found out that this is not very reliable, because as days are not fixed, the interval of one day is not fixed. It is shorter during the winters, longer during the summers, and so on. So it was finally decided that though it is not very appropriate, but it still was used in many places because it satisfied at least some. It could be handled as a crude measurement of time. And apart from these periodic timekeeping devices, there were also some devices which are not exactly devices but used to measure time. For example, if I take a candle, okay, so equal candles of equal sizes, if I light them up, will burn totally in equal intervals of time. So I can measure time in terms of how many candles have been burned. So to measure very small means intervals, specific intervals, such kinds of candles or incense sticks also in some places. And also more sophisticated was the hour glass. Hour glass uses sand to measure time. So Magellan, who went for a voyage around the world, it is said that he used 18 such hour glasses to measure the time. And this is about such kind of time devices. And there were also more precise clocks in those days. Actually, they were not called clocks, but now we call them water clocks. So they used to measure how much water has, means they used to take a tank and pour water out of it, or in other way also it could be that how much in a given interval of time, how much water has flowed inside the tank or how much water has been taken from the tank outside. So this quantity of water could be measured, and this could indirectly give the time elapsed. So these were the ancient ways of measuring time. But still the best thing was that periodicity is still now, it is preferred over such kind of time devices. So periodicity has the property that it repeats, the events repeat themselves. So like Galileo, what he found out was that some pendulums, if the amplitude is kept very small, so the time period remains almost constant. And the way of his measuring of those time periods was using his pulse, because he was crudely doing, means I have read somewhere that he was in a party and he was looking at a oscillating chandelier. So he had nothing else, so he took his pulse and used it as a clock, and used the time period, means used it to calculate the time period. So means people took this idea that pendulums have quite a fixed time period. So they decided that we can make pendulums of various time periods, and so that we can create a new standard of time. So we can have such a pendulum which has 3600, means which goes, which completes 3600 oscillations in 1 hour. And if such 1 hour has, means one day has such 24 hours, then we can call this one time period as 1 second. So this was a very crude definition. And actually now we have realized that seconds and years, or seconds and days, have no exact relation, means exact ratio, that these many seconds are these many years. Because as I said, that time period of Earth's rotation is not fixed, and even revolution around the Sun, it is somewhat variable. So but for very short durations we can at least define a second, because second it is in our hands. But year, because year itself is not periodic, the better way is to define the second. And it was also found out that to go for measuring, means more precise times or much shorter intervals of time, it is not feasible to have mechanical pendulums of smaller and smaller sizes to measure such short intervals of time. So with what happened with development of technology, we could create electronic pendulums, which are normally called oscillators. So using oscillators we can plot different or we can get different sine waves of voltage, which are basically the AC voltages, and the time period of those AC currents could be measured. And using different oscillators of different frequency, we can somehow calibrate them with each other. So that means if there is a faster oscillator and there is a slow oscillator, so we can count that in one period of the slower oscillator, how many time periods of smaller, faster oscillator have elapsed. So in some way we are actually calibrating the oscillators. And as time passed by, this concept of measurement of time became more and more clear. And finally, periodicity was regarded as the best thing to measure time. Means that is the best means to measure time. So till date, the most precise instrument that has been formed or devised to measure time has been the atomic clock. And atomic clock it depends on the transitions of electrons inside the atom, which are not easily affected by the surrounding temperatures and other factors. So more or less, if we make them as a standard or take them as a standard, we could standardize the value of our second and other units of time, which could be of much use because it could be accepted universally as standards. So it was thought that we should do this. So nowadays the SI unit of second is also defined in those terms. We have got very precise atomic clocks, means they can in 10 raised to 9 years or so, the variation could be around plus or minus 1 second. Such kind of accuracy has been attained with atomic clocks. So what modern definition of second says is that it is the time period elapsed during the 9192631770. This is the big number.
9192.
These many cycles of radiation, or these many waves of radiation which pass during the hyperfine transition of cesium-133 atom. This is the new definition of time. And I also read that the more modern definition is somewhat related to special relativity, which I don't know, and it relates the definition of time with it. Also, that definition also uses the definition of meter, and means it is somewhat related to length and the speed of light. So I have no idea about that. What I have idea is that this thing, atomic clocks are still very precise, and what I missed was maybe the normal watches we wear. Watches we wear were also somewhat devised in the times between, which means I did not talk about. But watches, what the concept of watches is that they use a source of power, and they use such means. Actually, initial watches used pendulums only. Because of their periodicity, they could have some time measurement, and it could be converted into say a second or an hour or a minute, like that. So initially watches were made like that, and gradually watches also clocks also developed, and sources of power were also improved. There are many new variations in clocks, and now even clocks and watches have evolved very much. That's all I have to say. And but the whole thing remains that I did not find any conceptual change in this topic, because what we are doing is we are just essentially improving the methods to measure time, but I don't think conceptually we have any way we have been benefited, because still what is time remains an illusion for us, and it is still a great mystery.
But you can say that throughout, however you measure the time, okay, it is really inherently related to the events. So definitely time is surely related to the events, property of the events. So in that way, in that way we can say that the conceptual change, okay, may not be because of this improvement in the methods, but in that way our concept of time has changed.
Yeah, that's true, but what measuring time, evolving of methods of measuring time, it's just that how precise we can measure, or how longer times we can measure.
All the methods you are using, you are always using events only.
Yeah.
No way you are not saying. No, I'm not telling that. In this way, conceptual thing is there, but still, this is changing concept.
Yeah, but it's not such a profound. Means I don't find it such a profound change in concept. But what I find is that with technology advancement, our time measurement devices are also advancing, which is very nice. And there are also for long measurement of long periods of time. Means I talked about very short intervals of time, how to measure them. But to measure very long periods of time, what is done is that still the most preferred method is like using some radioactive substance and using it to measure the thing. Like there is carbon dating. Because of cosmic rays, our body is constantly, the C14 is constantly replenished in our body. But when organism perishes, what happens that C14, it starts to decline. So if we somehow know what is the initial concentration of C14 in the body, and then we are able to detect after death, means now we measure how much is the present concentration. So we can, using some methods, because we know half-life periods of each of these radioactive elements, so we can use some techniques to find out the how old has it been dead, or how old is that object. So using these techniques we can also find determine very long periods of time. And using this, we have also, using the radioactivity of uranium-238 and the time period of our Earth has been estimated around 5.5 billion years, and it has also been very encouraging to find that we have found some meteorites which are as old as the Earth. So in some way it also tells us that about the formation of the Earth. It is now predicted that Earth was like a group of rocks moving together, and they due to the influence of gravity, they collapsed, and means meteorites fell, and means the Earth was somehow formed, and this is, and it gradually developed into the world we see.
I have a few questions. One is that in your account of time was missing.
Yes.
Says that you have recorded a lot of advancements, but you have not been able to, you haven't recorded, when did that change take place in terms of the time? At least approximately, when were people measuring time, let's say using water clocks, or when were they using candle clocks, or when were they using pendulum, or who was the, how did it happen, till what period pendulum clocks were used, when were the atomic clocks used? That is one part of my question. The second part of my question is that whenever we do history, one thing that we need is the time itself. The second thing that we also try to do is that who are the people we want? Because we don't want to miss out the human saga of the history. That is that who are the people who are the people? So if you don't mention the people,
then what happens is, as if you know, science is nothing to do with people, that it happens independent of people. So can you recall from what you have read some aspect of the time and the people in your narrative?
Time.
Who did what when?
Okay. Sir, actually these sundials and all, they were used, means we have records that they were used as long back as in 1500 BC. And we have found, records have been found that these were used in Egypt at that time. And water clocks have also been used in many parts of the world around the same time, or actually it was the more precise version of timekeeping devices. And it came little bit after these sundials. So this have water clocks, various models of water clocks have been found throughout the world in many places. Even in India I have heard that they have been found, and their designs are different, the precision is different, but still it was very long back, means exactly I don't know, but it came after sundials. And what happened then was, hour glasses came, these candles, and these were basically, candles and incense sticks were basically used in temples to measure how much time has elapsed. So these were actually not developments, but they started using candles, that they found out that even candles can be used to measure time. So they started using candles to somehow get the idea of time. And after Galileo, it was found that pendulums can also be used very well in timekeeping devices, because the time period is very constant. So using that, the development of clocks using pendulum started, and it developed. And many other devices which used similar concepts were evolved. And this atomic clock is very recent, maybe in the 20th century only, where it was found that using atomic transitions, electronic transitions, is the most precise way to determine what is the time.
So what do you think, because I still think that, you know, Galileo's introduction of pendulum for time measurement is a landmark in measurement of time.
Yes.
For one important reason. I would still want to defend that is a very important quote in the narrative that you have talked about. I would defend saying that it was at least clear that the set should be for a constant period. That is, look for a phenomenon wherein the period is constant.
Yes.
And then he thought that by keeping the length, you'll be able to do that. And I think that's not a mean proposal. But of course, then after that, whatever has replaced the pendulum is also because of that particular criteria.
That time period should be constant.
So that the period of the thing is constant. So possibly, of course, there are leaps, but what you are essentially trying to say is that this is more like an advancement. Are you aware of any of the physics concepts that are developed which have a room to modify our notions of time? For example, did Einstein transform our notion of time? Because you said there is no constant, so I am afraid to give you a kind of a hint to check. Is our very notion of time, like Newtonian notion of time, for example, is linear? Do we still have a linear notion of time?
Sir, actually, it's okay, means, but still I could not find how it changed our way to measure time.
That could be
possibly because of our own existence. Then we hardly live for 70, 80 years or 100 years at most. Therefore, it doesn't make much difference to us. But does it make difference to the universe? The other possibilities would be that suppose if time is cyclic. Consider the time is cyclic. Then what happens? So, does the very idea of time depend on Big Bang? It's because of the Big Bang that we started measuring time.
Sir, actually,
so wasn't time lapsing before Big Bang?
Sir, before Big Bang, what is said that we cannot get any information of what happened before Big Bang. Because all information what happened before, there could be another universe, that there could be anything before the Big Bang, but after the Big Bang, no information of the previous universe or whatever it was has been left. So there we are incapable of finding out or determining what happened before the Big Bang. So that's why it is said that time started with the Big Bang, and there is no meaning of time before Big Bang, because it doesn't make any sense. Because we cannot any.
Because it doesn't make any sense to us.
Yes.
Therefore, one may claim that time is subjective.
Yeah, time is really subjective.
So, for example, for an ant, the time is very different from. They have any notion of an ant. What kind of notion an ant would have about time?
Ah, yes.
Or any other being,
right? Yes, sir. We can also think that. Means the duration of 1 second may be this much to us. What is the same duration for an ant? Means, how does it perceive that duration?
And do they actually perceive, like birds, for example? You know, what makes them to, you know, actually respond to the changes
biological
clocks. There are, of course, biological clocks. So can one say that it's because of the biological clocks that we have evolved an idea about an understanding of life. So there are so many such questions. So, any other questions? So, except Galileo, you haven't mentioned, for example, any person's name. Take, for example, atomic clock idea. I mean, somebody must have proposed it at some point, right?
Yes.
So, who is that?
I have no idea.
You have no idea. And, okay. So, could we fill up those details? Now we can do it collaboratively, right?
Yes.
Because he has done his job quite well. So now what we have to do is we have to add up to the story. So, two things that I found missing, some of which you tried to bridge, is what happened when and who did what. So what is the who are the people? You know, sometimes it cannot be possible for you to find out exactly the person. Then at least you can find out the culture. For example, what was the time measurement they say in China? And another point is that when Galileo was doing inclined plane experiment, he did measure time. Right? So, how did he measure time? What instrument did he use? Did he use pendulum clock? Do you have any idea? So, can you find out? What clock did he use? No, I'm talking about inclined plane. See, inclined plane experiment was about acceleration plane. There, you have to show the relation to time period, right?
Sir, he could have
but used he didn't measure the time period there. In fact, his very argument was that the inclined plane is required just to reduce the time so that you will be able to get some value. Because, I mean, he also argued that we don't have a clock to measure with accurate precision. So, it's very difficult to measure because the thing is falling so fast. We don't have any such instrument. So, how do you do that? You can delay the fall by using an inclined plane. So, inclined plane was technically analogous to the fall. And then he tried to measure the time. So, what instrument did he use at that time? Did he use his own invention for pendulum? He didn't. So what was the other one? It's impossible, right? I mean, one
plus, yeah.
Okay, it's very small. So how do you measure any difference? Yeah.
Plastic one.
No, 12. A little before 12. You are doing it here?
Yeah, I mean, you have a class and I will measure it.
No, no, there is a class here because after that, Professor Balwant Singh's class.
Okay, then the class will be here. So I will just shift it to here.
So, so this is how the, this is there. And as far as I know, I mean, as per the descriptions, Kellinger used water bottle for inclined bench. Like he writes, I mean, I think, I don't remember the units. It's like, say, you know, I mean, usually, it's like this, but how much time has elapsed? 2 liters of time has elapsed. So it's as if, you know, time actually can be measured in terms of volume. So that's exactly the way how the time was measured. But astronomical events cannot be measured for finding out, for example, how many times something fast is moving. Okay, for example, see, if a time measurement was never a problem, why? Because everybody measured, for example, complete number of days. The time measurement is a problem only for shorter durations. So all the narrative that he has given is all about the advancement, about how accurately you can measure a shorter duration. So each instrument that we are taking is sort of advancing more and more in terms of how much more you can, details you can add.
Sir, actually, when my time measurement I think is advanced due to the festivals and all these, the current rhythm will be there, no sir, what's in the festival, that's true there. So there is, there is here some astronomers which appears under the that time. So they can know that time 3%.
No, but that will tell you the time of 1 year.
Yes,
period,
that
1 year.
That is very
so
accurate.
That was not a problem.
Long time spent is
very no. Accurate. So there was a time, I mean, there was a time when, you know, a year could be measured accurately by astronomical events. I completely agree. But what I'm saying is advancement of time was not in terms of whether you can measure 1 year or not, or whether you can even measure 1 day or not. Because almost there was some kind of an average we already done, saying that every day will be 35 hours, or some such calculation. So the problem is about, for example, within 1 minute, let us say. So 1 minute for us, for example, is a very long time. You can do so many things in 1 minute. So how do you measure the time duration within the minute is the problem. So which, for example, pendulum could do very well. That was the first thing. Okay, I think, Dhruv, thanks very much.
Thank you.
For your presentation. Thank you.
Good morning. My topic is vaccination. And the story of vaccination began in around 1700, somewhere in 1700, with Edward Jenner. Edward Jenner was a doctor in a village, and he observed that in those days smallpox was really a very epidemic disease. So what happened, he observed that the milkmaids who used to work with cows and touch the udders of the cows, they used to get some mild form of that disease, that is cowpox, which forms blisters in the skin. And there was some pus in the blisters. But he also observed that these milkmaids were not very susceptible to smallpox, which was a more virulent form of the disease. Okay, so what he thought was that because of the pus in the blisters, the milkmaids were not able to get, they were not very susceptible to smallpox. But so he did an experiment on a boy named Philip So he introduced some pus from the taken from the blisters of one of the milkmaid, and he introduced it inside a boy, and then he observed that the boy was never the boy never got smallpox. So with this idea, this was just a speculation by him. There was no profound profound understanding of what exactly is going inside the body. Actually, in those times, people didn't know how a particular disease spread or what is the cause of the disease, what happens. There were various theories, like the theory of spontaneous generation, which was saying that there is some malfunctioning inside the body, and there is something bad happening inside the body which produces toxins, and due to which due to those toxins the body got ill and something like that. But after some tests, it was shown that in certain kinds of diseases there were certain organisms present inside the body, certain kinds of microbes which were present inside the body fluids like blood and all that. And so the people again said that these organisms are not causing the disease, but they are actually the result of the toxins that are produced by the malfunctioning inside the body. So these organisms or these microbes were generated spontaneously inside the body. This was the speculation of them. But there were certain people who were not agreeing to it. Like one scientist, Helmont, he said that disease was due to some foreign organism that entered inside the body and causes some problems inside the body. But the people were not agreeing to this, and they have a firm belief in the spontaneous generation, process of spontaneous. It means this. It means that life can originate from non-living things spontaneously, without anything. Life can originate from anything spontaneously, non-living. So no living creatures are needed. This was their belief. And there was a scientist, Reddy. He did an experiment to show that he was the first one to show to perform an experiment against this spontaneous creation theory. He kept a piece of meat open in air in a bell jar, open and thoroughly in contact of air. And in another bell jar, he was having the bell jar was covered with some paper or something. And in the third bell jar, he kept meat, and he didn't cover the with paper or a very he covered with some net kind of thing. So that matlab air can pass through only in, but means a net sort of thing, so that flies cannot go inside, but air can pass through. So then what he saw was that in the bell jar which was open, there were the formation, there were flies, maggots, larva flies, maggot. So there were those organisms were found in that bell jar. In the second bell jar, which was completely covered, nothing was found. And in the bell jar in which there was that net kind of thing, in that bell jar, the maggots were found, but only on the above part of the net, because the flies could not get inside the bell jar inside the bell jar. So he thought of that. With this experiment, he thought that life cannot originate spontaneously, at least for macroscopic animals like flies and all. He was sure that they have to be originated from previous life. They cannot originate spontaneously out of nothing. Then after some time, Louis Pasteur performed an experiment, swan neck experiment, because he was also not very sure of this theory of spontaneous generation. So and he thought and the for the process of vaccination to be very clear and very very well established, one thing there had to be they had to discard the theory of spontaneous generation. Without it, the theory of vaccination could not work. So what he did was he took two flasks, so both of them were in the neck were swan neck, S-shaped neck like this, and then he heated both the there was broth.
How would you be very sure that you are understanding? I haven't understood what is this. What is S-shaped? Can you just see? There is absolutely no need to jump.
What about
if you have
a
diagram to make a diagram?
This kind of
text.
The neck was like this.
So
what is experiment? Huh. So two such flasks were there. Okay. In both the flasks there were broth and there was broth. He heated the broth so that it becomes sterilized, no bacteria was there. Okay. Then what he did, he of one of the flasks, he broke it from here. Okay, the neck was broken. And so air and dust particles could directly be in contact with the broth. But here the dust particles were entrapped here only. They could not travel this long. So what happened in this flask, he was able to get some growth of bacteria, some colony.
How did they get trapped there?
Because they can the dust particle can't move against the gravity now. It was like this. Like this.
Did you use some layers there?
No, it was infected, but it took time. It was not as you know the, like this. He was able to get the colonies of bacteria after a very short time, say 2 or 3 days. But here it was a bit longer. Then he thought that something from air and dust can enter here, and which causes and which were having tiny microbes, and they were on, and when they entered in this broth, they were able to get nutrients and they flourished, they reproduced and formed a colony of and formed a baby. In this they were trapped here only, so the growth was not, he couldn't see any colony so fast. So he thought that life could not generate from anything like that, because he had taken same broth in both the flasks, and he has sterilized first both the flasks. So now he was very sure that if it can develop hair due to non-living thing, then it can also develop hair. But because he has broken this and air and dust particle have entered, he was sure that some tiny microbes have entered already, which produced the colony. Okay. So then he gave the germ theory, which was like that every living organism originates from pre-existing life. There is nothing like spontaneous generation. And after that, he did some experiments and then he was interested in diseases, and then he experimented on a disease called hens, fowls. Okay, in that disease, the color of the comb of the fowl become, it changed color, it become less reddish, and there was
there was lack of oxygen, the fowl dies due to lack of oxygen. So what, the causal organism of that disease was already identified by some scientists, and so he, Louis Pasteur did, so he prepared a culture of the fowl, and then he introduced the the bacteria which was identified by another scientist, and there was a flourishing growth of that bacteria in that medium, and then he took out the bacteria from that medium and injected in a healthy fowl, and he found that the fowl got disease. So he concluded that due to this bacterium only the disease is there. Okay, earlier it was found that in that disease there is an organism which is formed, but they were not sure that this organism caused the disease. Now we showed that this organism caused the disease. Okay, and after that what he did was that he maintained the culture of those bacteria, and after some, he went to a vacation or holiday for some 2-3 months, and then when he returned, what he did, he found that the culture that he had left is flourishing, and he took out some bacteria from that culture and injected inside a fresh hen, and he observed that the hen was not affected by any disease, and it was safe. And then after some time he injected a fresh culture of bacteria inside that hen, and still he was able to see that there was no disease in the hen. So he was very amazed, and he thought that, you know, what could have happened. So he thought that because he had already heard the story of Edward Jenner, so he thought that there was a less virulent form of the bacteria that was present in the culture which he had left, and now when he has injected that culture into the body of the hen, the hen was not getting disease by the more virulent form of the fresh culture. So he thought that when we are propagating a culture for several generations, the form of bacteria becomes less virulent, and if we enter that less virulent form of bacteria inside a hen or fowl, then their hen or fowl become resistant to the infection from a more virulent form of disease. Okay, so what he did more experiment to find out to devise how because he had to devise something how much virulent to measure the degree of virulence. He want to measure the degree of virulence. For that he injected infected. He said that if same amount of bacteria was injected of two different strains, same amount of bacteria was injected in two different species of an organism, and if it produced same degree of disease, or then the degree of virulence would be same, something like that he said. Okay, then he found out that degree of virulence is inversely proportional to the time for which the culture has been kept open. Now what he did, he did an experiment. In one flask he took some he took culture and sealed it, and in another flask he took the culture and left it open in air. Okay, and after some months, what he found was that in the flask in which there was in which was sealed was very much was having very much the same degree of virulence as the original stock was having, and another flask was having very less degree of virulence, and it was very less virulent, and it could be used as a vaccination. But he was also not sure about the process, why the degree of virulence is decreasing because of the increase, inversely proportional to the time he has kept the culture. And after this experiment, he also performed some experiment on rabies virus, and got the vaccination of rabies was also discovered by him, and he laid down some of the principles of vaccination, but vaccination as a process was not fully understood by him also, but still he could generalize the process somewhat. So, and the his major conceptual change was that he discarded the spontaneous theory of generation, and because of that only the actual cause of disease was found out, and many preventive measures were taken against the disease that only. Because earlier people thought that microbes could generate from non-living things, so which was not alien. Getting inside, but the smell of the
can you draw like how was the operative smell? Is you very where is the net? Okay, so where is the so flies didn't go there.
Flies didn't go there.
So my point is that why then there should be no maggots?
There were no maggots inside, but there were maggots there.
How come there maggots were there?
Because flies were attracted because of the smell of this.
No, but the question is that maggots will form from where?
Flies.
How?
What flies? Like, they are the larvas of flies.
Right. So how will the maggot come? Then there is no food, and how will they survive?
No, actually, flies came
so
here.
Net can't give food, right?
No, I am not saying that net is giving food.
No, then, so I know I'm. It's not clear to me why there are maggots at all on the net.
Because flies come here because of their attraction towards the smell. Okay. So they aggregated here, and some of them gave larvae, which he could found. But the larvae were living.
As I know, what happens is that the flies can't give birth to larvae. They lay eggs. And then from how did the eggs hatch? And how did they on the net? That's not clear.
So the egg can hatch. Egg do not require. So egg do not require food.
Granted.
Okay.
Granted.
So egg do not require food, egg can hatch and larva can come. But after larva there will not be the formation of flies because the larva would not survive.
So
you
form, so is that what you expect? I'm not quite sure. We have to possibly check exactly what the role of the hand is. The second one was.
I think that it's village because that's where they make money there and they search food from somewhere else. In those villages, that's where they make things. And that's the false memory is only that.
No, otherwise one has to also find a correlation between the smell and the hunts to lay eggs.
No, sir. They will lay egg if there is a great aggregation of them. So there is a probability that they will, some of them will lay eggs. That's it. So if there is an aggregation of flies here, they, some of them will surely lay eggs. That's it.
No, I understand. So the statistical thing is okay. See, not clear to me. I mean, why should there be maggots on the net?
Because maggots cannot penetrate the
side. I mean, in fact, you would actually find maggots inside because the maggot that comes out of it, so it is so small, you easily fall down.
No, sir, the net is such that.
Probability of maggots falling down
is
very
high. Sir, the net is such that the maggots cannot come inside. But it could be that if we had taken a net.
Maybe that's not a net, that could be a cloth.
Huh, that's a cloth. It
could be a missing cloth or
something. That. I was not getting the exact word, sorry.
well, yeah, I mean, that's wrong. The other thing is that I couldn't understand the relation between the hood color and lack of oxygen. In the case of the fowl.
Comb, color of comb.
Comb, and what is it to do with lack of oxygen?
So that is a disease actually.
You said that the fowl died because of lack of oxygen.
Yeah, and one of its symptoms was that the color of comb disappears. Matlab it faints.
So that's only a symptom.
Yeah, that's
not because of the hood that it could get the oxygen, right? Okay, so that's basically so any other questions? Any of you have? So in your thing, I mean, as you could see, there are two things. Two important changes. One of them of course is the idea of throwing out the idea that life cannot come from non-life. So life begins from life. It is one of the statements that has comes out of it. So life doesn't come from non. So that's one of the important changes that contributed to actually in the long run about the very idea of life. Okay, the other thing of course is that a proper idea of some of the diseases. I mean, we cannot say that all diseases are caused by microbes. But we know that a large number of diseases are known by the time were caused by diseases. And then, the pasteurization, as all of you know, is one of the important concepts which led to boiling the stuff properly before the consumption. So, these are the two important classical changes. And there was some experimental details, but I think when you people have to read up and work out these things, to make sure that these experiments are properly read with all the details, like what was the control, like there is a control here.
This is the
similarly in other places also there must have been some control, like you must have also looked at different groups of fowl, some of them segregated from them, some of them not. So do bring out those issues as well.
Do we know the set of wedding?
Yeah.
Do we know now?
Actually what happens is that when there is a colony of bacteria which is left inside a broth or culture, and it is allowed to reproduce. It actively consumes the nutrients of the liquid broth, and ultimately what happens is that the nutrients become that much less that it do not support. So most of the we see the turbidity because there was a growth of bacteria, but now all of them are most of them are dead, but some of them are still living, which survives on the very less amount of nutrients that are available there. And because the concentration of surviving bacteria is very less, so we
it is
somewhat related to the mouse.
If I get a fresh culture, very less amount, still I may get
disease.
Very less amount of the fresh culture.
Because all of the bacteria in the fresh culture will be living.
But it's okay, you see, there are some are living. Rare enough.
No, so the degree of the disease, the degree of the severity of the disease will not be the same.
If that's what I'm asking, whether it is dependent on the organism itself or on the concentration of organism.
So for the same organism, if you keep the organism constant and vary the concentration, then you will surely get the virulence, which will increase with concentration. If the severity of disease obviously depend upon the organism. One AIDS virus can cause a very severe disease as compared to something
else. The organism depends on staging of the fresh culture and the staging.
Organism is the same.
Organism is the same.
Activity is changing. Activity is changing.
Yeah, I like that there are two types of non-organism, bacteria.
They are different strains of the bacteria. Okay. And that virulence is different.
Okay, I have now two issues.
Yes, sir.
Occurred to me that you have missed out something. Particularly in your description of virulence and non-virulence. See, the virulence and non-virulence doesn't just depend on the bacteria.
It depends upon the host also.
So it depends only on the host.
No,
the reason is that whether a bacteria is a disease causing one or not depends not on the bacteria. It causes disease to whom? It's not a property. So independent of the host, there's nothing like disease for a bacteria. There's nothing like virulence and non-virulence. You have to always define it only in the context of which is the host. For example, something virulent to a chick is not virulent to me.
Yes.
Or something virulent in my case is not virulent there. So virulence and non-virulence is to be described only in terms of whether the host has resistance or not. You haven't used the term resistance.
Sir,
so that's very important, because immunity is the most important contribution of this whole story, particularly with regard to vaccination. So what does vaccination give rise to? Vaccination gives rise to immunity. So what is immunity to do with? So immunity has to be connected. So you have to connect the story of immunity to virulence and non-virulence.
Sir, you are saying about one individual. When we are taking a species as a whole. Okay, we are not taking a particular individual.
Virulence and non-virulence actually depend on it is independent of the host.
On a population of a host, if a bacteria causes disease, okay, then it is virulent. But if suppose there is one individual out of the host which is resistant to that particular bacteria, so we can't say that the bacteria is non-virulent to that host, but the host is resistant to that bacteria.
That's precisely what I'm saying is missing from you, because you haven't used this language so far. I'm saying that this particular issue of, for example, resistance and immunity, or also the important things that got introduced into the jargon of biology after posture. Immunity was not discussed before.
So actually, posture was also not able to actually we understand what is immunity.
Understood. That's quite right. But then he was at least able to say that something was happening when I injected. Okay, the less limited things with a live person. Okay, and then he was, so he was trying to say that the person is becoming resistant. Because of what? Because I have introduced this non-virulent strain. And over a period, he may get fever, he may even get blisters, he may get something else, but still, over a period of time, he is managed to sustain by it. And so that was the reason why the most of his things were. Of course, particularly if you know about the case of chicken pox. There was this notion that it is very interesting to have, I mean, it is important to have chicken pox. And that's known, particularly in Indian culture, for example, it is very well known. It's part of folklore that it's better to have chicken pox. And that was done even before the notion of immunity was diminished. These are some of the social aspects that get into that. One last question before we take a break. Penicillin.
Penicillin is an antibiotic which was discovered by Alexander Fleming, and it is basically it was produced by fungi to restrict the growth of bacteria around it. It was for the protection of the fungi itself, but somehow it was an accident discovery. And Fleming, who was working with, I think, who was working in a lab with this fungi, Penicillium rotatum, he suddenly found that something out, the fungi was restricting the growth of bacterial colony around it, so he thought that it can be used as
actually I was reminded of Penicillium when you were talking about that he went on a vacation. So Fleming also went on a vacation. He has a colony of bacteria. So when going on vacation is not really the case, but he has a large number of cultures. But some of the cultures where the bacteria were not growing as brilliantly as in other cases. And then he found out that in the petri dish where it was growing, the bacteria, he found that there is another growth. And that is the penicillin. So it is eating up all the bacteria.
Then he extracted out penicillin.
And then he found out that bacteria would be killed by okay, great. So, thanks for both of you. We'll come back after 10 minutes.
Yes.
Yeah? 10 minutes is enough.
Which book?